sketches towards an outline of a critique of political kinetics. Why another critical theory of modernity? And why precisely now, at a time when most people have taken their lives beyond the reach of theories? And if there has to be a bare minimum of intellectual distance to the so-called status quo, why not go with Marxism as usual? Why no recourse to the ethical potential of humanity? Why not poetry steeped in ruin at a wailing wall of facts? Or at least a fashionable scepticism towards the neoliberal swing of things? No, for the reason that Marxism appeals to ethics, poetry, and scepticism of this kind are not in line with what is necessary and possible for critique, because they themselves function at best as agents of impotent mobilizations, and yet do not contribute enough to a fundamental understanding of mobilization events. The fate of the Marxist social critique exemplifies this more than any other. In their time, Marx and his successors were of the partially justified opinion that they made the causes of modern radical changes in the world transparent with their analysis of capital flow. Additionally, they formulated a revolutionary ethics that saw the strategic core of its praxis in the political control over capital. From there, humanity's emancipation was rigorously to be steered towards a life in general wealth and limitless productivity. Thus, the fathers of socialism openly placed their bets on an ethics of productive mobilization with a humanistic intent. Admittedly, they did not suspect that only one aspect of their construction would be rather inadvertently realized, namely that regulatory instances must indeed be incorporated within or placed counter to capitalist processes if one is to prevent the worst for all of humanity. In more modern terms, without a certain, shall we say, political cybernetics of capital, the host organism that is Earth, along with all its historic guests, is at the mercy of devastation. This cybernetics, should it ever come into play, stems in the long term less from socializations, since these alone lead to the effect of more of the same, only worse, than from a consequent ecological curbing of production motives and the demilitarization of profits for the benefit of festive overspending and a general mutual patronage. In its more assertive days, the old socialist left tried to morally push its demand for political control over the processes of capital with the formula socialism or barbarism to the decision point. This is the point where its revolutionary politics fails, when countered with actual historical findings, and the concept of world processes as mere effects of capital flows becomes consequently doubtful. Considering the results so far, very little can be found between barbarism and actual existing socialism to suggest mutual exclusion. However, there is a broad field of instances where they are synonymous. Now, it is a legitimate supposition that real socialisms not only had historic bad luck, but also were unable to achieve anything better in a world full of enemies. Their mishap, however, is also caused by their fateful commitment to an inadequate concept of the modern kinetics of world change via Marxist analysis. Of course, it was not without reason that Marx saw his reconstruction of modern labour relations and capitalism as already having uncovered the general law of movement of modern class societies. Whatever it is that moves in these societies on a political, cultural, psychological and ideological level, it can be, according to him, nothing more than a secondary movement that is determined in the last instance by the economic primary movement. This primary movement has exhibited a special legality since the 18th century, the age of industrial revolution, since people's actions have been largely understood as quote-unquote material reproductions of their lives in the capital process. A categorically new phenomenon has emerged that no other age has had to contend with, the phenomenon of work as such, the category of work sans phrase. Marx sees this as a capture of human activities in the material life process through the value creation of capital. The industrial proletariat gives the category of work, Sans phrase, its social shape. But human activity only becomes work as such if it belongs to a form of production which, in its very essence, continually produces further possibilities of production. Marx explains this extraordinary phenomenon by linking the anthropological motive of self-production both to the economic motive of profit, i.e. investment return, and to the agonal motive of competition. An explosive mixture of motives emerges from the alliance between self-preserving self-sufficiency, pursuit of profit, and competition that lends the modernizing movement its impetus. The decisive mechanism in this new arrangement is indeed the suspected self-exploitation of value, that work of alchemy which organizes an activity in such a way that its results consist of the increase in ability to carry out the activity. Wherever the modern work, sans phrase, sets the rhythm, not only is a given form of life reproduced economically, in other words, in terms of home or palace economics, but also an increase in productivity becomes part of the primary product of production. This is precisely in accordance with the kinetic formula of mobilization. The self-exploitation of value as production of productivity is one of the many ways in which the modern mobilization loop begins to turn into movement that leads to more movement. Marx was right to describe capital, which circulates around its own self-propagation, as a demiurgic processing magnitude that forces the concrete lifelines of workers to march to its abstract rhythm for the sake of its self-sustaining self-propagation. But he gives far too little attention to the kinetic foundational process of modernity as the general movement towards more movement. Marx attributes the fact that, in modern times, everything moves further, faster, and more intensively to the dynamics of capitalist modes of production, and uses confusing schemas of primary and secondary movement, i.e. base and superstructure, to interpret it as a problem that is sui generis. In reality, the capital process would never have begun had it not been sustained by independent, parallel, and preceding structures of self-actualization and self-intensification. It is no coincidence that Marxist interpreters of early modern emerging movements continue to be perplexed by the riddle of quote-unquote primitive accumulation. This perplexity necessarily remains as long as we insist on understanding the accumulation process in economic terms. In actual fact, the problem of accumulation leads to the core of modern kinetics, which is, in turn, we've already said it, inseparable from the secret of subjectivity. We find more promising clues if we reject the question of primitive accumulation of capital and turn our attention to that of primitive accumulation of subjectivity, always provided we are right to see it as not just a quote-unquote metaphysical phenomenon, which it also is in a certain sense, and not address it merely as the seat of intelligible and creative capacity, but above all, to recognize the agency of self-movement towards movement in it, which is as puzzling as it is world-shaking. We would then be dealing with the primitive accumulation of a kinetic energy, which, always mediated by subjective initiatives, repels itself from the world as first nature, turning it into pure raw material, energy source and substrate, which is then used by the kinetic energy to construct a new world from mobile artifacts on top of it. In chapter 3, we will identify the nature of this kinetic subjectivity and connect it to the tension between a birth through a mother and a self-birth through one's own efforts. Wherever the modern kinetic model of success, movement towards increased mobility, begins to operate within a sector of activity, wayward contributions to the great dawn of the New World are created. A dawn where Europe is split off from its archaic, antiquated, and pre-modern way of being, followed by vast parts of the rest of the world. It is likely that classical Greece acted as a prelude to it. In sophistry, we can see the first signs of the development of intelligence into sport, and in the Olympic Games, a cult-like intensification of physical exercise. After that, the kinetic genie in a bottle seems to have been corked for a millennium and a half. It is only underground that the energies continue to rumble, having been exhausted in tribal feuds, migrations of peoples, Hunnish wars, Saxon slaughters, Germanic missions, politics of the First Reich, agriculture, livestock farming, monastic immersion, hermitage, simple reproduction. Then, the great initial spark. It seems to begin in the monasteries of the High Middle Ages, where the true factories of primitive accumulation of subjectivity are to be found. What is deployed here in the religious exercises of ascetic self-intensification? Autogenic movement to increase movement. Concentrating on concentration. Immersing oneself in immersion. Praying for work. Working at being able to pray. It has its analogue in the various sectoral movements towards increasing self-empowering mobility, in the accumulation of scientific knowledge, which can only retain its status as valid knowledge if it is organised as research, that is, cognitive mobilisation, in the self-exaltation of modern territorial states, which soon reveal themselves to be transport states and arm themselves as nation-states, in the dynamic of military mobilisation, which has always been an arms race, that is, a battle for ballistic and kinetic advantages, in the self-dramatisation of fit bodies that surrender to the ecstasy of increased movement, almost as if entering a cult, in the self-erotisation of sexual subjects who practice arousing their ability to be aroused, in the self-deification of the individual as artist, who revolves around the creation of their own creativity in a constant expressive mobilization. In all of these fields and sectors of human mobility, self-mobilizations are being played out that span over several centuries. And the economic process is certainly their most willing medium, most unilateral driving force, and most versatile accomplice. In it, movements towards more movement push through industrial and monetary processes as well as an irresistibility that is sui generis. But the Marxian value that generates additional value per capitalization is in reality more a kinetic than an economic phenomenon. Its parameter is the power to move, and its content in turn tantamount to being able to move. A view of mobilization as a fundamental process of modernity has only recently been coming to light. Not because anyone claims to be more insightful than the great social theorists of the previous centuries, but because the thing itself has appeared on the stage of recognizability for the naked eye to behold. It is only for us, in view of the late modern effects of acceleration, that the phenomenon of pure mobility has become real and conceivable. In analogy to Marx's version of the fundamentals, a categorically novel phenomenon seems to appear for the diagnosis of the late 20th century. Mobility as such. Self-movement sans phrase. This postulates not only a third industrial revolution, with all that has been done to the reality of modern life by electronics, nuclear technology and computer science, but also modern politics with its arms races, mass movements and initiatives from above and below. It also assumes modern tourism and its conception of the world as service counter and landing strip. The cable-equipped screens, too, and the new disarray of love with its urban theatre of separation, nightclubs, computer games, and consoles in children's rooms, jogging in the park and athletic cults in the stadiums, disposable bottles, Andy Warhol's factory, and the captured music. It is only once the self-movement sans phrase has directly forced its way into everyone's reality of life as a real category that the dynamic motif of a society made up of self-mobilizing subjects can be designated as such in the tone of calm critique, without the diagnostician having to rise to the status of a prophet. And it is only recently that we have been forced to perceive, in philosophical hindsight as well, that Marx and Nietzsche said the same thing. The will to self-appropriating self-production and the will to power, as an initiative to enforce an interpretation of the world, are two alternate formulations of the same creative, large-scale attack of the acting spirit on, quote-unquote, matter, of the same kinetic nihilism that apprehends what exists as source of energy and construction site, and nothing else. We can differentiate three basic tendencies or categories of the modern fundamental process of mobilization, which has in the meantime absorbed the entire way of the world. The great self-movement towards more movement takes place first as a tendency towards motorization, installation of an autonomous process units, and continuous acceleration of them. Quote unquote, tachocracy. Reader's note, I'll spell that if you want to look into it more. T-A-C-H-O-C-R-A-C-Y. Tachocracy. Second, as a tendency to relieve, numb, and disable the functions of a subject that are too sensitive, slow, and oriented towards truth. Automation through desensitization or elimination of context. Third, through the progressive eradication of distances and imponderables in coincidence with strategic appropriation of the other logistics. In these three executing aggregates, the world as a hitherto inert resource for automobile system subjects becomes processed, codified, made ready to use, and derealized. Derealization is the psychosocial result of a systemic self-realization, where the outdated term reality logically shrinks to the residual function of the not yet mobilized. For a few years now, American deconstructionists have been whispering the new message to each other. There is nothing outside the text. Only the naive still cling to the antiquated fiction of the external referent. Even epistemology shows glimpses of the impending short circuit between kinetics and semiotics. The world is logically ripe for evaporation. Only on the horizon of an omnipresent mobilization do we see that there can only be one kind of appropriate critique for such a reality that works towards a pervasive awareness of movement. Yet this is again formulated to be misunderstood, because this work towards awareness must not move forward, but take a step back in order to gain distance and disconnect from the process of acceleration. Only hesitantly do we call the critical aspect of this mobilization theory after a classical model, the critique of political kinetics. This critique claims the ugly and seemingly merely physical and subhuman concept of movement for the humanities, social sciences, and history in basic conceptual terms. We can only imagine what kind of reception the critique of political kinetics will receive, when we recall what kinds of arguments and faces were made by the beautiful souls of the 19th century in response to the Marxist impertinence of accepting the term work as a fundamental category of historical anthropology. All we know is that this time the Marxists have joined the beautiful souls and bourgeois pragmatists as part of the great coalition of mobilizers. The Marxists, because they are the first to understand that the critique of kinetics is only possible from a post-Marxist position that views, quote-unquote, dialectical materialism as a particularly faded form of modern mobilization folklore. The beautiful souls, because they are at least not inspired by such an ugly theory while they engage in their favourite occupation. The dawn of a new age and the human potential movement. The pragmatists, because they in any case suppress any thought that could even remotely question their axiom of economic growth at a rate of 3% per annum. Now, no one can be under the illusion that anything more can be called into question through a critique of political kinetics than just the growth rate of an industrial civilization that is racing, with the force of a train that's been accelerating for centuries, into the unknown. Whoever raises the question of kinetics does no less than to call into play the problem of whether and how this train can be brought to a halt, or at least diverted somehow. And it is a matter not of whether individuals can get off the train, of course they can, provided they are the right kind of individuals, but of whether modernity as a whole can free itself from a way of being that is ontologically determined by the formula being towards movement. These questions are too fundamental to be left to fundamentalists. Therefore, the critique of political kinetics exposes a working framework that can potentially be joined by every thinking and praxis that contributes in some way to the study of movement and to the exercise of the right kind of mobility. The critique of political kinetics will be a working title for the studies of a transdisciplinary post-university quote-unquote college. It can begin its exercises wherever the correctness of human and systemic movements needs to be examined. Like all other university-like entities, the transdiscipline for the awareness of movement requires power-neutral terrains to which the executives and stakeholders of the mobilizers have no access. It is the best tradition for the protection of theory since the European High Middle Ages. But since the operation of almost all currently active universities in this world has evolved into preschools of mobilization and cognitive subcontracting companies for the quote-unquote attack of the present on the rest of all time, the critique of political kinetics has to look for other spaces in order to hold its studies. Whether this will take place in the new social movements, the centres for alternative culture, para-academic startups, that is not a pressing matter for the time being, and besides, there are also not the only possible critiques. And besides, these are also not the only possible critiques. It is pressing, however, that the transdiscipline of the critique of movement cultivate polyvalent new brains of the societies, in which the knowledge of demobilization from a variety of fields is instantiated. For all of us who come from the mobilization process, this knowledge will seem difficult to handle, implausible and frustrating because the critique of political kinetics can under no circumstance be the theoretical conscience of a quote-unquote praxis. Some will say that its bizarre and absurd result is to describe real processes in such a way that initially there is quote-unquote nothing to do. Inasmuch as all those who are eager for action will make fools of themselves before doing what is to be done first, before hesitating, before stepping back to perceive more precisely, before ceasing with what has already always been done, before imperceptibly becoming open to the correct movement. we can guarantee that anything else will once again yield blind mobilization, however magnificent the slogans of action may sound. Through Critique of Political Kinetics. Though Critique of Political Kinetics has its basic starting point in post-Marxism, we may not extrapolate that it relates to the insights of the socialist tradition in a destructive way. What carries weight compared to that tradition is the expansion of the conceptual field from production to mobilization, on the one hand, and the amendment of the prognostic symptoms of kinetics on the other. One has to make the effort to once again study the Communist Manifesto in a way the text has for a long time now deserved to be studied, as the Magna Carta of an aggressive kinetic nihilism, in which modernity declared for the first time what it is and what it wants. But a critique of kinetics will no longer be able to participate in Marx's euphoria in the face of the observation that in a world through which capital pulsates, all that is solid melts into air. In this phrase, we can completely hear Marx as a thinker of mobilization. It is not for nothing that he has provided half the world with rationalizations for making history. But he is also a thinker of mobilization because his great terminology machine, especially the dialectic of productive forces and relations of production, is only built for the purpose of demonstrating the blastability of the inert conditions that still offer oppositions to the unleashing of effective production and the ultimate evaporation of assets. Marx's work messianic vision is directed at a state of society where the activity of productive selves only has its own issues to deal with. Removal of real resistance. Total appropriation of the other. Self-appropriating self-creation 24 hours a day. In its own way, a critique of political kinetics will indeed also know a dialectic, namely that of the forces and the conditions of movement. Only, it will not lament the fact that the conditions still inhibit the full use of the forces, but rather dryly note, if need be, that the forces of movement are in any case not too far from evaporating all conditions in which conventional movements on our part have been possible. The critique of kinetics, too, will point out, in accordance with its derivation of postmodernism from the effect of a second passivity, that there is a growing organic compound of the masses of self-movement, and therefore also a tendentious decline of the advantages of movement. But it would never occur to it to prognose a revolutionary situation from these observations. Similarly, catastrophe-loving speculations about the connection between total system collapse and the rising up of the masses are foreign to it. What this critique does emphasize is nothing more or less than a crisis-induced opportunity for an evolutionary recall of the false mobilization forays. Just as the percentage of fixed capital permanently proportionally increases in the capital process, so too the dead, automated, centrifugal masses continuously swell in the worldwide mobilization of systems and increase their dominance over the gestures of living mobility to the point of oppression. Moreover, the same is true of the independent scientific research companies, where the self-movement of theoretical apparatuses ensures that the act of thinking plays as good as no role in relation to what is thought. These extraordinarily uncanny operations are expressed by the concept of automation as inadequately as by the term alienation. Our classical vocabulary is of no help to us whatsoever in the face of such new process-related realities. Movement is the great unthinkable in our languages. Considering all of this, we can anticipate the contours of what a critique of political kinetics might entail. It does the groundwork for a critical theory of modernity that could use expressions of movement to describe how mobilization problematically sublates all old-world stock through mobilization, and to criticize it through exercises in demobilization. There is no indication that something of this sort will be successful, except the success itself, for which it is impossible to decree any indubitable criteria. In any case, the point of departure for this critique is the observation that the departure of modernity towards an independent, conscious life for all has largely lost itself in a rather blind, kinetic passing on of the sometime initiated process congeries. The cost of the impressive yields of modern possibilities for self-movement and self-actualization in many fields is as incalculable and increasingly unbearable self-surrender to the subsequent automatic self-lapsing processes. If we are right to imagine the immediate future as a time when the growing risks of disaster rapidly actualize, it is because we can already formulate the basic kinetic scheme of every possible accidental disaster. They will be the heteromobile result of countless self-mobilizations. A singular and dark inevitability emerges from the interaction between countless automatizations. And as concerns our much-vaunted future from a systemic point of view, its secret lies entirely in the variations of this great inevitability. Among these variations, we can determine two kinds of extremes. One leads to a relative cessation of mobilization as a whole via the mutual de-acceleration of partial processes. A great commendation to the obstacles. The other drifts into the exponentiation of mobilizations through interactions to become an eco-kinetic inferno. And our process consciousness? What role does it play in the world theatre? That of the hero, the fool, or just a powerless audience member? If everything is really heading towards a fatal end, then our conscious self can take heart in the fact that it plays all the roles of the endgame at the same time, so that it can be the audience of its own dramatic morphing from mobilization hero to process fool until the curtain falls. In the relatively benign version, on the other hand, subjects would be faced with a remarkable experience of themselves. In a time when modernity could save itself from itself, subjects too would stop moving as ontological agents of movement towards more movement. They would then know from their changed way of being that they are not the agents of mobilization, but the guardians of real movement.